Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. I am the host of the program. As always, you can listen to us live on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But we're also now streaming live on YouTube, Twitch, as well as X, the Everything app. Just go look for the 92.9 FM official page and official account, and we are streaming live there. You can also stream us audio-wise on the Odyssey app, as well as the TuneIn app and the iHeartRadio app. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good afternoon, sir. Can you tell this ridiculously warm weather to go away?
No, absolutely not. I'm here. I'm here for it. I don't even care that my eyes are dried out. Like, I have to change my contacts like twice a day.
Can we at least just make it consistent? That's all.
No.
Can we get that much instead of it going back and forth?
That's not what we do here. Our weather.
I know. But
when people say there's no such thing as magic, explain weather to me. That's always been my contention.
You got me there.
Coach Herr is going to join us on the phone. We're going to wish him a Merry Christmas and a Happy Christmas Eve to all of you. Thanks for hanging out with us, for delaying maybe that church service, or maybe doing like what George and I am. We're sending our families to church, and here we are hanging out with you because we got a great job. So he's going to join us in just a moment. Interesting story over from The Athletic that's about a question that we've been discussing, which is ticket pricing. Why are things the way they are? It seems like we have a lot of empty seats, and looking at it, and it looks at it in compare and contrasting from the American market to the European market. Of course, this was a big topic because of the ticket prices for the World Cup. The foreign correspondents have not been fans of the ticket pricing here in America, but there's some applicable data points that I want to discuss as it's discusses a topic that's been prominent here on this show. We'll get into the list during hour number two. If we haven't gotten to the Grizzlies yet, we will, of course, discuss the Grizzlies' revenge game win over the Jazz last night. But the Grizzlies offensively look great. We got the G.G. Jackson game for 2025. He was fantastic last night. Jaren Jackson was also good. And it's also Santi Claus season. And Santi Claus continues his outstanding play as we get closer and closer to Christmas Day. So we'll talk about that and more during hour number two. Josh Johnson's back in our life. What a world.
He never left.
What an absolute world. We also got the CFP ratings, and I hope everybody's sitting down for this. Numbers on ABC were monsters. The numbers on TNT were not.
Shocking.
You'll never be surprised. Also, one footnote, the TNT games went up against something called the NFL. So
needs context?
We'll talk about that and more. We'll tell your story. Then we'll say Merry Christmas and we will get out of here. But now let's welcome to the program. He's my basketball coach. He's your basketball coach. He's also Team Thad's basketball coach. He's also the team director of Team Thad. Follow him on all socials at Dream Big Herd. Coach Herd, Merry Christmas to you and yours. Good day, sir.
Merry Christmas and happy holidays to everyone.
Also, congrats are in order. Congrats to the U. Congrats to the Hurricanes. They advance after knocking off Texas A&M. I watched the first three quarters, and then we ended up going to the game in Oxford. And I thought I was going to be able to watch it on my phone, but then I remembered what it's like going to a football stadium, and your phone just doesn't work. So you were kind of keeping me updated. I found one person that could get the game on his phone, so we had a little bit of an update. But there were people in my section that still thought the game was 3-3, and the game had already ended. So that shows you where everybody's score app was on Saturday.
Yeah, I don't think that was just y'all, Jeffrey. So I went to the store for a quick second. I got to see it, but it was saying 3-3 on all phones, and that's after we had scored.
It could have also.
I don't know what was going on.
Well, I bet you could talk me into this. Most of those score bug apps are now directly related to the live stats from the game, and you could tell me the live stats were having a problem. That will happen during bowl season. Like last week when we were watching the Tiger game on Friday, the live stats from the Gasparilla Bowl were at least two series behind the game. I noticed it was like, we were watching the game. The Tigers were actually putting a drive together, and the score app still thought NC State had the ball starting their drive. So I think maybe that was what was going on. But I don't know. How you feeling? Because it's one of those situations where good, tough road win. The parts of your team that you'd really depend on, that defensive front was nasty and really basically won the game, and then comes down to it. The offense needs to make basically one play. Tony does that. But, I mean, you're now taking on Ohio State. It's quite the challenge. Like, how did you feel about the Hurricanes overall?
Man, I actually feel really good and great, Coach. One, because I like how we won. That actually meant a lot to me. We got a good defensive line, but one thing about us playing against a top SEC team that I was kind of wary about, we will do some knucklehead plays on defense, especially in the secondary. That's how we got into this position 2 years in a row. Like, we'll lose to NC State or somebody just out of nowhere, right? And so for them to, you know, keep that game 3-3 the whole game, all the way into overtime. And I think both teams could score a lot better. I think it was big time, man. And we finally scored at the end and got an interception. So I'm excited about it. I know Ohio State is arguably the best team in the country. But guys that's not Hurricane fans don't understand this. We have a deep passion. I ain't going to say hate how we got cheated back in 2000. We were on our run. We had went undefeated 2 years in a row, and the game was over, and the ref threw the flag in the second national championship game with Claret in them. And, you know, all Hurricane fans, y'all got to understand, it means – you know, they found out that ref actually was somewhat connected to the school, all that kind of stuff. But I think it will be some motivation going into this weekend.
It was a hold.
Why you wait so late to call it, though, Jeff? That we were celebrating. It was over with.
Because the flag got stuck in his pants.
What?
You know what drove me insane about that game? Why was it 14-14? Why that Miami team was so freaking loaded. Like, that should not even have been a game.
You're right, Ohio State. But you know what's the name got hurt too, and he was the heart of the team.
Yeah, McGahee injury. I mean, that's still, you know, they're like for my dad's generation, the Theismann leg break is a seminal moment, whereas like everybody remembers. For me, I will never be able to unsee the Willis McGahee leg injury.
Yeah, he was a bad dude, Jeff. He really was a bad.
Yeah, but then
dude,
y'all put in some like little unknown Frank Gore after it.
Hey, Jeff, back then we had them loaded up, dude. Second string.
It was like that team had like 51. That team had like 51 NFL players on it.
Hey, my favorite player of all time, Jeff. I know he's not even really an NFL player. I think they just fired him as an offensive coordinator or something last year. But Ken Dorsey was my guy. You know, that's when I started with the Hurricanes. Seventh grade, Ken Dorsey, those years. That was my love of that team.
No, it's so funny. Ken Dorsey, like you'd think, like he has the reputation of being like game manager, like you, like Captain Checkdown, if you will, like just a bus driver. He completed like that year was like 51% of his passes. Like,
He might be that in the NFL, but no, he threw that thing, man, because he had Andre Johnson. I mean, he had plenty of receivers.
It's the funny thing is he had the reputation of being a game manager, but really he was just chunking it.
To them great receivers.
Yeah, like so his senior year, he completes 56% of his passes, but he had a 8.6 yards per attempt. Like, that's air yards per attempt. Like, he was throwing it deep, 15.2 yards per completion, like, 28 touchdowns to 12 picks. Like, he had the reputation of just being, like, the game manager, but no, the guy was, like, chunking it deep.
Oh, yeah, that offense was electrifying, and then our receivers he had, and, man, it was unbelievable. Jeffrey, I know you keep up with the best. Well, how far behind they got us against Ohio State?
9.5. Here's why I'm worried. George and I both thought, like, that feels like way too big. But oftentimes when you get two dummies like us going, that feels like too many points, that's where you start to get nervous. But, like, my thing is, I'm very curious to see how last year the teams that had the long layoff and didn't play in the first round, they all came out quite rusty. Now, was that a problem with the way that the tournament was seeded and some other factors, perhaps, but the one thing that I think I actually, if Miami can continue to get pressure, Julian Sain has not spent much of this year under duress. And while he was not bad against Indiana, he was noticeably not as good as he has been the entire year. I'm curious to see if Miami can get after him. And then if Miami can run the football like they did, that's the one spot in Ohio State's defense. Like, I don't love the matchup of the receivers against that secondary. Like, that secondary is absolutely nasty. But if they can really run the ball on them, like, I don't see any reason why that can't be a game.
Yeah, I for sure think it's going to be a game. I'm going to tell you what, y'all probably talked about it earlier in the week, Jeffrey, but it's probably going to be a game. And year to year, that playoffs get interesting because this year, I think the away teams won the most.
Yes, so last year the home teams went 4-0 and they all covered. This year, the only two home favorites to win were Ole Miss and Oregon, who were playing the G6 teams. The only favorite to win and cover was Ole Miss, and then the two road underdogs won outright in the other two games.
Yeah, so I think it's week to week is a lot of suspense right now. I'm gonna be real. As great as a team Oregon is, did you watch that whole game, Jeffrey and George?
Yeah, I did.
I really think, I'm going to be real with you, that game would have been, I think Oregon would have been on their heels a little bit had not when they got in that red zone early on. They called like three straight penalties. I think JM, you were scoring there, and when they scored, I think it would have been more of a serious game. When they push them back. I think this happened twice in the goal line. Like, now they something like it's first and goal or second, but they all went on the 20 and 30 yard line. Then after that, it was a kickoff. Are you familiar with what I'm saying?
Yeah.
At the beginning of the game?
The thing about that game, though, was it used to be the noticeable difference between G6 teams, even the good ones, like the elite G6 teams and the elite power teams. I used to always think the difference was defense and particularly like lines of scrimmage. The clear difference this year was I actually thought JMU could run it okay on Oregon, but the clear defense, like the issue was not up front defensively. The issue was like their secondary had a 0.0% chance of covering any of those receivers.
George and I
saw the same thing in Oxford. Like, when it really came to shove, like, Tulane just had no chance of covering Ole Miss's receivers.
No, you making sense. I would always say the difference was the offense and defensive linemen, but I guess you do got to say. Now, you know what? Them smaller schools do be having, like, one DB, though, that's usually, like, an NFL prospect, the better ones.
We had the kid from Toledo that I think the Lions drafted. And like Saban, even like Saban on the draft coverage was like, "Yeah, we tried to recruit this guy." Like we basically was like, "Yeah, we tried to tamper with him in the portal," but he was committed to Toledo. I mean, to me, like it was also tough to determine how much was JMU like late. They scored a lot late, and it was like it really just looked like I was like, I think Oregon took their starters out. Like that was kind of where I was struggling. To me, the other thing was, if JMU was going to be competitive in that game, they had that long drive to start the game and then what, they kicked the field goal, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they were going to have to be able to score in bunches, and I just don't know if they ever could have done it.
Yeah, late. Yeah, I don't get them. I get them credit because they could have just laid down.
Oh, for sure. Like especially 49. The way that Oregon like just bombarded them in the first half.
Yeah. Yeah, I say I get them credit, but I didn't take it serious like they was ever coming back. Although the coach was mad from Oregon, which coaches we all get crazy. But I think first half, like you said, they would have touchdown that first possession. Second possession, they got right back in the goal, you know, in the goal zone or whatever. So I felt like, they can do some things. But I don't know how they're going to do it next year. People was complaining, but I do think – you know, them boys had a really good year. Let me ask you this, Jeff. Although the bowl games got to have their games, do you think in the future where everybody can get them experiences that the bye teams, they should do first and second round at home? Because I feel like it's having a bye advantage, because I feel like the reason last year some of those teams beat them is because you said a long layoff, they were able to play at home, they was hype coming into the game, and now you're playing on neutral grounds, and it's like outside of the bye, which I guess it comes down to, would you rather have a bye or a home game? I mean, that school doesn't make any, you know, the amount of money. Like, the, you know, you get what I'm trying to say? Like,
oh, for sure. I mean,
it be a disadvantage at the top four.
There were a couple of issues last year. Number one, Ohio State's losing to Michigan screwed everything up because it was such a bad loss, it knocked them down to like six. And they missed the Big Ten championship game. And last year, remember, to host the bye, you had to be a conference champion. So that put Arizona State and Boise State as top four seeds when they were the last two seeded teams. And so the whole thing got screwed up from a seeding perspective. So it was out of whack. And then when you got to the teams with the byes, like, Oregon sitting there and having to wait for Ohio State to show up. Like, congratulations. You just put together an unbelievable, undefeated season. You were clearly the number one team, and your reward was you get to play Ohio State again. Awesome. Congratulations. Then then you run into the situation where, like, with Georgia, remember we had the horrible terrorist event down in New Orleans, and the game went from New Year's Eve night to playing it in the middle of the day the next day in New Orleans, and there was just kind of a weird atmosphere. And then furthermore, they were playing without their starting quarterback. Now, I don't know, Notre Dame proved themselves to be a deserving team, so do they still win that game with Carson Beck? I don't know, maybe, but like there are some other factors there. But the biggest question you raise is definitely something that I think they want addressed, which is it really a reward for these teams to not have an early home game, especially if we're going to be in this era of it's all about making money, man. And I know this, maybe it wasn't the single biggest money-making event in the history of Oxford, Mississippi last week, but in terms of a game day operation, I think they made all the money that they could have hoped to have made and more.
Mm.
And yeah, these schools are missing out. Like,
No, Jeff, I was saying I think it'd be good for, like you just said, everybody. Like, you was in that atmosphere, right? So wouldn't it be great? Like, let's say a team that always be great every year. Like, was it anybody who got a bye last year and this year?
That is a great question. Georgia.
Yeah, like, think about it. Georgia,
right, let's make sure, because Oregon got a bye last year but not this year. Ohio State got a bye this year but not last year. Indiana did not get a bye last year. Yeah, Georgia's the only team.
Yeah, so like Georgia have never hosted a game. I'm sure they would want to still host a game in the playoffs. You know
what
I mean?
To your point, this was a big talking point for Georgia fans the last couple of weeks of the year, because remember, they had lost to Alabama head-to-head, and there was the question of whether or not you would rather have Texas beat Texas A&M and therefore put you into the SEC championship game, or just finish the season at 11-1, likely to be the 5 seed, host a G6 team at home playoff game, or go and have to play Alabama again. Now, it ended up being, I actually think for that team, it was a good thing, because they've had the Alabama heebie-jeebies, and I think like that was a cathartic win for them. But, I mean, that was a legitimate question. I mean, I don't know how you feel, but, like, there's none of these bowl games that really, like, stir my soul. I wish it would be like the NFL. Just make it all, man. Until we get to the championship game, just play them all. Earn your home field.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jeff, because now that you done made the playoffs so big, the 12 team, I don't really – and the bowl games are just put in those. I don't really think the bowl games is as valuable anymore. Like, you know, at one point, the Sugar Bowl, the Cotton Bowl, the Orange Bowl, the Fiesta, I mean, it really meant something because that was the only game. I get they want to have them in certain areas, but like this week, make the Orange Bowl, you know, I know this might be out of the region at Georgia, make the Sugar Bowl, you know what I mean? Still let them guys get their home game. Let Indiana have the Sugar. I know that's usually, you get what I'm trying to say, but
yeah, just make
guys,
name the bowl game as, all right, the bowl game, the Orange Bowl is being played at Athens. I mean, I guess their argument would be the bowl, this, I feel guilty even saying this, but this would be their argument. The bowl games are also part of the local economy, and like there are, and I don't think it's 100% false, but you know, like they would argue, you know, what the Orange Bowl does for the Miami community and whatnot, like that would be their argument. But I just think that we're going to see, like, even a game that was what, 41-10 in Oxford between Tulane and Ole Miss, it was a great atmosphere, man. It truly was. And I just think college football, so much of, like, if we're just talking what is a better football product to watch, the NFL is so much better. But what the NFL cannot really replicate that college does, one is rivalries, and two is the pageantry, the atmosphere, like all that, like the feeling of an entire, like, you know, because all the NFL teams, with the exception of the Packers, like, they're all in massive cities, but like there's no this idea of everyone going and assembling in this one place to watch a team. Like, you can't really recreate that.
No, the SEC is unbelievable, Jeffrey. Think about this. Even Auburn, I mean, it can be the baddest.
It's still one of the loudest stadiums I've ever been to. Yeah.
Man, and I still remember this, Jeffrey. This was almost 20 years ago. I went with Thad Young, who's getting recruited by every school in the country. So he had an official visit to Tennessee. We drove. They were playing Auburn. On the way there, Jeffrey, you would just see cars going to Kentucky, going to Ole Miss, going to like real family traditions on Saturday, driving up to the SEC, all SEC games, right? You get to the NFL, it's only like 5 or 6 teams that support they stuff like a SEC team, like a, you know, a Cowboys or Steelers, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I mean, we think about the Steelers obviously travel extremely well. I think your Niners travel well.
Yeah, we do a good job.
The Cowboys obviously always travel well. But, I mean, it's to your point, like, there are so few fan bases, like, nationally. And obviously the games, you know, these teams are playing so much farther apart and whatnot. But to your point about Auburn this year, after they fired Hugh Freeze, like, they're going to likely miss a bowl game, and they're playing their SoCon game against Mercer. They still filled the building up. That's pretty impressive.
No, that's for real. You know who else do pretty good traveling, Jeff? You would never think, underrated. Memphis has, I know they have a Cowboys, Steelers, and Cowboys. Memphis actually have a Green Bay Packers club that's pretty big that meet on Sundays. And the Raider fans won't let it go. Raiders actually have a pretty good fan club around the country. I don't know why still, but they do.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Raiders fans have been beaten down, but there's no question that was another one of the national. I mean, but like the Raiders fans have not been beaten down, but like the other one I always think about is what Daniel Snyder did to the Redskins, to the Commanders. Like, you know, that used to be one of the biggest national fan bases.
Really?
Oh yeah. I mean, huge. Like, part of his story is the deterioration of one of the strongest fan bases, really, like, in the NFL. Because, like, unlike, you know, the teams we're talking about, the Redskins Commanders, like, they had history. You know, it's a long, long-standing organization, and he just absolutely just ruined it.
Have they ever won a Super Bowl outside of that black quarterback, maybe?
Doug Williams, yeah. Doug won one, Theismann won one, and I think they've won three with Gibbs.
They showed the Eagles still go strong, too. Eagles been traveling strong, too, lately.
Eagles are strong fan base. It still feels a regional fan base to me. Like,
what about the Lions? Regional.
Lions feel kind of bandwagon. Like, I think they're like the Lions and the Bills kind of have the same thing working for them, where they have good, passionate local fans, because why would you keep supporting some of the things that they've seen? Whereas, like, I think nationally, like, it's easy to root for the underdog and you want to see them win one, but I don't necessarily know, like, yeah, Bills travel pretty well, but I don't think they're at the level. Like, when the Steelers hit the road, it doesn't matter where they are. You're going to see the towels, man. Like, that, to me, like, I'm convinced the Titans or the Oilers would have played that second season in Memphis, if not for the last game of the season, they played the Steelers, and it was 45,000 Steelers fans.
Oh, yeah, that's crazy.
I mean, I remember my dad, brother, and I, like, we drove down to the Liberty Bowl, and my dad was just like, oh, my gosh. He's like, this is unbelievable. How, like, this is, and sure enough, like, that was the next day they decided to play in Vanderbilt Stadium the next year. All right, I want to ask you about this, because I want to be fair. Like, in the end, I understand the job that Penny Hardaway has. Like, I feel like it's a tough job, and I don't know if everyone's caught up to it being a tough job. But Hurd, make the rotations, make the number of guys. Explain to me what we're watching, because it just feels like chaos.
Are you talking about it? Because I've been reading about it. That, like, am I off when it's 9 different starting lineups and 11 guys? Or was that a lie? That's what somebody was saying.
No. I believe we're now at 10 starting lineups in 12 games.
Oh, so this might have been before.
Correct. I think before, and I believe I'm not 1,000% sure, because I can't, like, cross check it. But I'm nearly certain McDaniel, Hardaway, Abdul Hakeem, Thedford, Sila, that would be another. Like, I'm nearly certain. It was definitely 9 and 11. I think we're now at 10 and 12.
10 and 12. Okay. I mean, that's hard to explain, Jeffrey. You know, because numbers can't lie. And when you're doing it and you're not winning either, that causes, you know, concern from the people. The only leverage I give him, I guess the only thing I would say I understand is, I think some of the guys that he foreseen being starters, or he thought should have been starters, have been hurt. So with some of the lineup changes, because as I know, Stafford was out some games, Curtis been out some games, another kid been out, you know what I mean?
I think Quante's missed some games.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, would you say, I mean, can't we give it some of it because of that, to be fair, maybe?
I don't know, because I keep going back. Because what drove me insane was, you know, of course you'll always hear the, you know, when you talk about the lineups, like, this is AAU-ish. And I was like, uh-uh. I know a grassroots coach. You have never started 10 different lineups in 12 games. I was like, I know for a fact he has a rock. Like, he has a pecking order.
Jeff, I need you to do me this favor, and you too, George, because y'all haven't been, but a lot of the local news come, Jason and Kane. I think John might have came once. The Nike stuff come to Memphis this year. Take an hour or two of your time. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Can you get me a parking pass?
I would do my.
If you get me a parking pass, I'll do whatever.
Okay, come an hour. So the reason I'm going to tell you is because people still think this 97. So the average fan, they going to say some AAU or middle school. But when you come in there, you're going to be shocked. This is like high-level Nike stuff. Everything's organized. Ex-college coaches is coaching in it. Ex-NBA guys are coaching in it. Real rules. I mean, it's not like going – you know what I mean? It's like the –
No, the thing, though, is, you know, like, I'm happy to go support you and your guys. My whole thing is I think when people are trying to use the AAU as a pejorative, what they really mean is street ball. Because,
okay, yeah,
because
yeah,
you
yeah,
and I, like, yeah. I know the machine that is now high-level youth sports. It is not just, you know, ragtag, throw it all together and get your moves in. Like, it is an operation. And then there's also, as you know, there's big money involved. Like, you can't afford just to be like, you know, throw it together. Like, well, what's it going to be? You know?
No, Jeffrey, and I'm not just saying it's take up AAU, but especially the Nike thing. Like, it's true professionals that even around it. I think some people think it's like way back in the days where it's shady. No, when you come out this year, guys, a lot of the guys who do the run programs, I coach them. These are like big business owners, investors, doctors. You know what I mean? It ain't nothing like people who outside of it think. And then if you love college sports and you love, you know, NBA, I mean, AJ, the Bantam, Cooper, Flair, all those top guys, they came right out the Nike League. They all been in Memphis the last couple of years. So you actually get to see, like, oh, this is where they're headed. Oh, this is like the baby NBA. So it's real good. But back to the Penny situation, you know, and to his defense, Coach, you know how everybody have a game plan until they get hit? They say that in boxing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we have had a very hard schedule, Coach, and at some point, when you constantly, and I'm going by listening to some of his press conferences, when he say, guys got to know how much this city means to them. We got to get some guys understanding jerseys. He done said that a few times this year, guys. And for me, it's like, as a coach, when you try to find motivation, it's almost like, I'm sure you done been at a game before where a coach said, give me anybody that want to play. Anybody that want to play at this point. Whoever willing to get effort, whoever get. I think he's just trying to find, and there's no excuses, because it do look disorganized at times. We need a consistent five. Is it fair to say we didn't have a consistent five, or are you saying?
No, there's. I think the only
people are saying
the only consistency is Doug, and that's out of necessity because they don't have anyone else. But like, it's kind of like when you're saying like could I consider the injuries being a part of the story? It's not necessarily that. I don't think that's helped, but I do think the biggest problem that he has had, the guys that he was counting on to be his best players have not delivered. And that is causing a lot of frustration.
I mean, could you ever imagine, Jeffrey, the butt in here, a guy at the Memphis level, what you would have had to give at Bradshaw. I mean, you couldn't imagine. I know it's getting better, but you couldn't imagine this story being that bad. That was a guy that was supposed to be a top three best player on the team, a 30-minute player guy. And
I guess the only rebuttal is, while I kind of agree with you, the rebuttal would be, it's kind of like there's a lot of people in Oxford frustrated with AJ Store, and I'm sitting there going like, what made you think the fifth time was the charm?
But he actually had some good seasons.
He's been a little bit like, I guess, like, I think people thought it was just going to be penciled in replacement, just like Dane, where Dane, it didn't work out at Illinois, but he'll get to this level, he'll dominate, and it'll be fine. Dane's story's a little bit different. Like, Dane wasn't necessarily moved out of the rotation at Illinois because he was playing poorly. Illinois figured out they needed to push the tempo and change their style, and that didn't suit Dane's game, and so Dane kind of found himself on the outside looking in, whereas it wasn't necessarily just how he was playing. Whereas Bradshaw, it's just been disappointment after disappointment. But I also think it's fair to say this. He has been even, like, as bad as it is, like, I don't think it was reasonable to think it would be this bad.
I'm with you. And then, and to, like you just said, people was really low on Dane, and I think Penny and his staff did an incredible job with him. So at that point, you can't fault us and people for, like, thinking, oh, we just did the same thing with another kid that came out of the Big Ten. Now, you have just pointed out, Jeffrey, that, no, his production has been low. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's not the same thing or whatever. I don't think people saw it like that. I think people almost thought, because, let's be real, before this year, I think people have put a nail in the coffin, but Bradshaw would be still be considered a kid with a higher ceiling than Dane. So people like, oh, I know he, you know, because he was a number one player. He was all these years ago. And people like, oh, I already know this is 2.0, and it hadn't worked out.
No, it hasn't worked out. And then, but I mean, there is also this reality of, I was not someone that thought coming into the season that, hey, they're going to, you know, finish above 500 in this non-con schedule. And, you know, they're going to probably, you know, have a chance to be an at-large team. Like, I always thought their path was very simple. They should be the best team in the league. They should win the league, and they should make the tournament that way. There's nothing I've seen so far that says that that can't be true. Because when you go and you look at Tulsa, who in the metrics ahead of them, Tulsa has scheduled their way to a 10-1 record. Now, does that mean that I think that they're going to go 18-0? No, but the reality is, as long as they're, you know, if they go 12-6, 13-5, and as long as they're first or second in the league, they get all the way to Saturday in the conference tournament, and you just got to win two games and you're in. Like, your circumstances really don't change. To me, it's just a matter of, can he figure out the best collection, the best rotations, the best numbers? Because I think if he's just constantly doing this, I don't know who's going to show up tonight. And I put some of this on the guys. Like, the guys got to step up too. But I just think if he's just constantly trying to have rotations that don't make sense, that don't play together, I don't think they're just going to waltz through the league.
Yeah, you saying that could make you nervous now without
yes.
it being a consistent starting five. And I can see that. I still think they're going to win the league for some reason, Jeffrey, until I see the first 2-3 games in conference just looking crazy. And I have to come on here and be like, oh, I don't know, Jeffrey, but I think they are. Jeffrey, let me ask you this. Do you feel like maybe everybody got to play a step up from what they really are? Like, give me the same
I want to be very clear. It's going to fall on him because that's the job. I think every single guy on the team could play better. I don't think that's too much to ask. Like, I guess the argument would be is how much of them looking bad is because they're playing with guys that they're not used to playing with. Like, it does feel like when you watch a Tiger game, someone throws it out of bounds and everybody just starts pointing at each other. It's like, how much of that is because they're not playing with rotations they should be? But I do fundamentally agree, guys should be playing better.
Yeah, and when I say a step up, Jeffrey, like, let's say some guys have reached a max. How do you think this same team would be with PJ? And then everybody could have kind of – do you think everybody could have kind of, like, take a little pressure off themselves and could be more on what – because sometimes you can ask some kids to be do a little more than what they – you know what I mean?
Yeah, so the PJ questions – the PJ question's interesting because do I think PJ would have solved some of these late games, like when they've been in the game, even had leads late, and they can't hold it? Yes, because – Penny's best teams are you have a clear go-to guy at the end and you let him make plays, and PJ would solve some of that. Where I have the struggle with PJ is it was clear to me, and again, I'm the outside party, and I'm not necessarily listening to everything that PJ and his team were telling Penny, and I understand negotiations. It was just obvious to me at the end, PJ was going to go wherever the highest bid was, and I never believed that Memphis had the highest bid.
See, I thought they were saying, am I reading stuff wrong? Because I thought somebody said Memphis was right up there with them.
I don't think Memphis made a bad offer. I don't think Memphis made the highest offer.
So what about the reports that was it? I'm reading the wrong reports about the like $3 million at one point. They were the highest. You think he got way more than three?
I think they were the highest bid. Remember, there was a period because remember he didn't officially enter the portal until like a couple of days before maybe making it official with Kansas State. I think they had the best offer early. And then I think when everybody else started coming in, and I don't think they had the best offer.
Mm.
I think that was as the kids were saying copium.
And how is PJ playing? I've been off and on. He ain't playing as good as he would have at Memphis, but he is.
He's got good numbers, but Kansas State's kind of doing the same thing they did last year.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like I don't necessarily know if it's been better for anyone.
Either side.
Yeah, I mean, let me pull it up. I mean, let's see.
Yeah, for some reason, I felt like PJ, outside of getting the money, he was kind of playing a little bit with, I don't know if it could have gotten better.
I think what happened, though, with PJ, I think PJ told every side what they wanted to hear.
Yeah, because outside of it, Jerome Tane is a good friend of mine, so I love him. But to me, you don't leave Memphis, and if you do, I mean, maybe a blue, you know what I mean? Because I think anything else would have been a gamble. Because, granted, like you say, Kansas State still losing, and if they wasn't, do you see, even though they made their run years ago, you don't see Kansas State being a Final Four team. I mean, that's the only way you leave being a first-team All-American. You know how great that is being a first-team All-American. I just don't see people leaving that.
No, his numbers are pretty much identical to last year. So he played more minutes in terms of the percentage of minutes last year. But this year, his offensive rating is exactly the same, 113.2, the exact same number. He's taking 30% of the shots at Kansas State. It was 27.6 last year. A little bit better effective field goal percentage this year, 56.1. True shooting percentage, 59.8, but it was 58.3 last year. His rebounding rate is slightly down by like a percentage point. His assist rate is slightly up at 26% from 24%. Turnover rate also slightly up at 19.6% versus 17.9. But, I mean, across the board, his numbers are almost exactly the same. 40% three-point shooting on 40 attempts this year. He was 36.4 last year, and he's shooting 55.1% from the floor. Like, his numbers are pretty much dead even.
Oh, okay. Well,
there's a couple of categories where it's slightly better, but there's also, you know, there's a couple of categories where it was a little better last year.
But it don't feel like he up the crazy thing about that. It don't feel like he up for, like, All-American and stuff. Like, I haven't been hearing people.
No, absolutely not.
As much as maybe them freshmen just taking over.
I mean, I think that's I think that's the other part of it. Like, there's a lot of high-profile names that are having really good years. I mean, I think that's a huge, huge part of it. All right, we kept you too long. It's Christmas Eve. Merry Christmas to you and yours. Enjoy your Christmas Eve. Enjoy your family. Tell your beautiful daughter Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Thank you, George. Thank you, everyone.
That is Coach Hurd. He's my basketball coach. He's your basketball coach. He's also Team Thad's basketball coach. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to get into this story from The Athletic about how U.S. ticket prices got so expensive and why it shocks the rest of the world. It's a topic we've been talking about. We'll talk about it a little bit more next, right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. The Grizzlies.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Total, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
One last night at Utah. I don't know if we're calling it a revenge game or not, but the Grizzlies with a 137-128 win on the road last night. Santi Aldama tied his career high that he'd set a couple of nights previously. We'll talk more about that game when we get into the list. But George, there's a story over at The Athletic, and a lot of this is thank you, Mr. Bolton. We appreciate your work there. Also, I think we got a good report. His daughter, I think, said good scan from the cancer diagnosis.
Oh,
so
that's very good. That's always good to hear.
Shout out Miss Lucy. No one loved Michael Bolton more like my mom's best friend, our next door neighbor. She loved Michael Bolton. There's a story over at The Athletic, and it's comparing ticket prices. And the premise of the question is how U.S. sports tickets got so expensive and why it shocks the rest of the world. And the story starts with the anecdote. The protests erupted over unacceptable 77-pound tickets. That is the British measurement in terms of the British currency. In 2016, when Liverpool announced new prices ranging from the equivalent of $13 to $110 for a seat at Anfield, that's their stadium, fans united and voiced their disgust. A supporters committee called the pricing uptick extremely disappointing and morally unjustifiable. That weekend, around 10,000 fans walked out in the 77th minute of a match, and only after singing to the club's American owners, "Enough is enough, you greedy bastards." A few days later, the owners apologized for, quote, the distress, and walked back the ticket prices back to £59. 9 years later, their most expensive ticket to see one of the most popular sports teams is around £61, or $82 US. This, according to Ian Eyre, who was the former Liverpool CEO, he now runs Nashville FC. He was the Liverpool CEO at the time. Quote, "I think the 2016 uproar scarred them." Decades later, Ayer's nascent MLS club sold tickets to a regular season match against Inter Miami for hundreds of dollars. Was there any backlash? No, Ayer told The Athletic. Season ticket holders, he explained, already had their seats secured for a much lower price. And as for the rest, quote, "I think in people in this country and in U.S. sports are accepting that if you want the hottest ticket in town, it'll come at a price." Of course, when Inter Miami showed up, that was when Lionel Messi showed up.
He's still there.
I can't remember if he played that game, though.
I remember the game that it's referencing, I don't think he did.
Because I remember it was like that was a – because Messi Mania early for MLS was massive. And
still kind of is.
No, I mean, you know? But I'm talking about like –
yeah, that first season.
Every story was like the ticket price. Like it was all about what he was doing for tickets.
Right.
And remember, that was to the point where the MLS thought actually that Apple TV deal was going to work, and they've already backed out of it.
Yeah.
But shout out, we're getting F1 on Apple TV. Are we going to have to pay more for that?
I forgot they were switching from ESPN.
Oh, boy. All right.
Thanks for that reminder.
There's a couple of... easy for me to say. Couple other notes from the story. U.S. sports are more expensive than ever. The price of attending an NFL or MLB game rose on average by around 300% from 1991 to 2023, according to the Fan Cost Index. The average NFL ticket now costs more than $300. The cheapest ticket to an average NFL game is around $169, according to an Athletic analysis earlier this season, more than every single standard EPL ticket except those in the most expensive tier for the most appealing games at Arsenal.
So, on that note, with that one specifically, when they're talking about that separate tier, because I feel like this is important relative to what we're talking about in terms of like a U.S. sporting event, that sort of tier includes food, drink,
yes,
before the game, after the game, you know, a level of programming with, you know, coaches or players, that sort of thing. Whereas what we're talking about here is just price of admission.
And George, remind the people out there, who owns Arsenal?
is, correct me if I'm wrong, Kroenke?
Yes, he does.
I had to make sure he was that American, because I know Liverpool has American. It's
the Glazers. The Glazers
own
Liverpool.
Own the Buccaneers?
Correct. They own the Bucs.
I could have sworn there was another one now over there. Or is it Leeds?
Well, Chelsea has the, like, members of the group that own the Dodgers, but I don't think it's the same guy. Not the guy that's been...
That just bought the Lakers.
Right, but it's part of, like, the Dodgers ownership group.
Right.
I just want...
Oh,
I want my oligarch back.
Fenway. Who does Fenway own? Is that Aston?
No, maybe we backed up. Liverpool, I think, might be...
Fenway.
But the Glazers own something. No, Glazers own Man U, maybe.
I think you're right.
I think the Glazers own Man U, and if anyone's followed how that fan base feels about their ownership group,
yeesh.
Not going great. Yeah, I think the Henrys own... Fenway owns Liverpool. The Glazers own Man U. Kroenke owns Arsenal.
Yes.
All right.
And then we don't have to get into the piff of all this.
So the Saudis have
Newcastle,
and then Villa's... Didn't Villa get some piff money?
I think they also got some piff money.
And then I think the Qatari investment fund, I think, owns PSG.
Yeah.
All right. So it leads to the question, why have ticket prices soared in the U.S. while remaining comparatively low in most of the United Kingdom, Europe, and elsewhere? Of course, obviously, there's going to be economic factors and whatnot, but it also simply boils down to, I think, kind of a mindset. And the mindset is, the biggest reason why, we sit there and take it.
Yeah, I mean, when was the last time? I mean, to your point, literally the first anecdote, the first part of the article is, hey, they raised prices by, what was it, about 10 pounds, 15 pounds maybe?
Yeah, it was on average, I think it was maybe 20 in that case. I think it went from
what, 59 to 77?
It was the equivalent of, depending on the ticket, $13 to $110.
Gotcha. And there were protests. People walked out of the stadium. Here, prices just keep going up and up and up, and people just keep buying tickets.
Or empty seats.
Or empty seats.
Like, now, this is where I would like to see some analysis, because every sports franchise promotes, well, we sold, you know, X amount of tickets. Right. What I'd like to see is, my eyes tell me, as someone who watches the Premier League, you don't see a ton of empty seats.
If they say they sold 60, they sold 60.
I would like to see actual numbers of people through the doors, tickets scanned.
Right.
I'm betting they have a higher volume of tickets scanned than we do here, particularly in the NBA.
Now, I wonder, does that also just come back to the fact that they are more reasonably priced? There's also, I mean, we talked about it just now with Hurd. There's a history there. Like, a lot of those franchises are a lot older and a lot more ingrained into the community.
Well, there's no question a big part of it all is a lot of these franchises, like when the Henrys buy Liverpool, well, guess where Liverpool's got to play?
Liverpool.
So they don't have their they don't have their number one play in their playbook, which is, if things aren't going the way that I want and you don't like it, they can't just threaten to move.
No, absolutely not.
Couple other notes. The cost of everything has doubled since the 1990s. Income growth on average has outpaced inflation. Americans in real terms have essentially gotten 20% richer over the past few decades, and the richest Americans, the top 10%, are pulling away from the middle class pack. The economists theorize ups their willingness to pay for the tickets. It's certainly the case, said Lindsay Owens, executive director of the economic policy group think tank Groundwork Collaborative. The wealthier Americans are doing more in-person attendance at events. The U.S. population has also grown from around 290 million in 2004 to 350 million today. And in that time, neither the NFL, NBA, nor MLB has added a team. Several teams, meanwhile, have actually built smaller stadiums with more premium seats. Demand, therefore, has theoretically increased, while supply, especially of the cheap seats, has decreased. However, this is also important to note. Ticket prices, though, rose more than twice as fast as the price of goods in the U.S., generally from 2000 to 2019, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Of course, though, there's a seminal moment, and this has been something, of course, I've always joked about. The rest of the explanation begins in and around 2009, when baseball's San Francisco Giants pioneered, quote, dynamic pricing. The scheme, whereby prices are adjusted either manually or automatically based on actual or expected demand, has since become ubiquitous in U.S. leagues, and it has allowed teams to capitalize on the Americans' growing willingness to pay. Decades ago, they'd set a price and affix it to a sign to a ticket box, and even the people willing to pay more would pay that fixed price. Now, there are models, algorithms, and technology that allow them to raise prices if they, or the computer software, sense that fans are actually willing to pay more. According to another one of the experts, the teams are
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.